The Pesach is the sacrifice of a lamb following the prescriptions of the Torah that at the new moon of the first month of the spring, beginning of this seven-day holiday, we are to take a lamb and to bring it to the shrine and offer it there to God. Now, in the early biblical days, our fathers took a lamb, clan by clan, to the shrine, and they offered it upon the altar, and the fat and the blood of the lamb was left at the altar, and the carcass was taken by the clan or the tribe, the family, and it was roasted, and they ate it that night, the first night of the holiday. And if anyone was defiled, impure, and could not enter the shrine, or if he was away on travel, on a trip, he was obliged to take this lamb on the full moon of the second month, a month from now, on a day which we no longer celebrate, which was called then Pesach Sheni, the second Passover, and offer it properly as required to God. Now, clearly in ancient times, the Passover was associated with God's continuing protection and care of the community. And somehow, if a family in Israel had not offered the Paschal sacrifice, the Pesach, it felt exposed. It had not participated in God's redeeming power. During the days of the Second Temple, it was no longer possible, according to Jewish law, for the family to bring the lamb to any shrine. They had to bring it to Jerusalem, to the great temple in that capital. And as the Passover season approached, you found in ancient Israel that thousands of male Jews began to move from the towns and the farms, from the outlying areas up the Judean hills towards the capital and towards the temple. The historian Josephus, who, as you know, lived during the last days of the temple and through the destruction of the temple, reports that he was in Jerusalem for the Passover in the year which would be our year, 65. And that at that point, 3 million Judeans, 3 million Jewish males came to participate in the Pesach. Now, the estimation of crowds is a notoriously exaggerated affair. But the Talmud itself goes one step further. In a report in the Talmud, in the tractate which deals with the laws of the Passover, it reports that during the years of the reigns of King Agrippa, around the 40th year of the first century, the king desired to do a census of all male Jews. And he had the high priest order all the priests in the temple to set aside the kidneys of the lambs that were brought. And these were then numbered, and they were found to number some 600,000. And the demographers of that day estimated that a lamb was brought for each family of 10 who had come up, which would indicate a pilgrimage to Jerusalem that year of nearly 6 million. Now again, the numbers are exaggerated. Talmud tells us that this Passover was called the Pesach Muvadim, the Passover of the dense crowds. But it's enough to say that tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of Jewish males came during those years to Jerusalem and offered there the Paschal sacrifice in the confidence that they were performing a ritual act which assured them of God's continuing concern for Israel. And we know something of the ritual which accompanied the pilgrimage. We know it from, of all places, from the New Testament. For the Gospels tell us that during the last year of his life, Jesus and his disciples decided to come to Jerusalem for the Passover. Jesus was in Bethany, and he and his disciples came up from Bethany to Jerusalem. As they approached the city, he sent ahead two of the number to hire an apartment in which they could share the table fellowship, share the food and the talk of redemption. And apparently other disciples were sent with the lamb to the temple sanctuary, and they brought back the lamb to the apartment where others had been busy preparing the Passover meal. And that night they talked about the theme of redemption, and they sang what the New Testament calls the Passover hymn. And the talk of that Passover night, as reported in the Gospels, is Christological talk. It has obviously been reworked from whatever it was that Jesus and his disciples talked about as they rehearsed the meaning of the Exodus. But the Passover hymn is clearly one of the Hallel Psalms, one of the great Psalms of Thanksgiving, which we read this morning, which was in our Haggadah last night. Hodu l'Adonai ki tov, ki le'olam chasdo. O give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. This was the great act of the Seder during those last centuries before the destruction of the temple. And so last night as we participated in our Seder, we were participating in perhaps the longest live, most ancient of all the rituals of our tradition, a table fellowship in which we participate somehow in the mystery of God's delivering power, of his protective care, in which we sing the ancient psalms and worship to a certain degree as did our fathers in ancient days. But that Passover, which was observed by Josephus or by Jesus or by any of those days, was itself a development of a long history. For the Pesach goes back beyond even the earliest figures in our Bible. It appears from whatever we can deduce from the habits of the Bedouin herdsmen, that they begin to move from their winter pasture in the wilderness, in the desert, to the Mount Summer pasture in the hills of Judea and of Lebanon at the time of the full moon of the first month of the spring, this time of year. And any time of leaving, any time of departure was deemed to be a dangerous time. There were all kinds of demons and spirits and gods hovering over the way. You were secure where you were, and you're never quite secure until you get to where you're going. And so it was the custom, apparently, to take a lamb, perhaps the firstborn of the flock for the new year, and to offer the lamb there in the winter pasture before they left, to sprinkle the blood either over the flock or over the shepherds, over the clansmen, we don't know quite how, as a form of protection. The speck of blood would protect them until they reached their summer pasture. And somehow, when Israel escaped from Egypt, whether it was in the springtime, around this time of the year, and the associated was made between that departure and the departure of the flock, or whether it because it was simply an act of departure, of leaving, and the ancient people, the Israelites, associated any time of leaving with a paschal sacrifice. The idea of the Passover sacrifice became part of our tradition, woven into the theme of the Exodus. And when the Bible first describes the Exodus for us, it tells us that in Egypt, when the last of the plagues was about to descend upon the Egyptians, the Hebrews slaughtered a lamb, and they took the blood of the lamb, they sprinkled it on the doorposts of their house, and the angel of death passed over the doorposts, the houses of those with the blood sprinkled on the doorposts, the houses of the Israelites, and killed only the firstborn in the exposed houses, the houses of the Egyptians. So from the very beginning of our history, the Paschal sacrifice, the Pesach, has been associated with God's protective care, care for those on the way, care for those who are under his protection. And when your children ask you, what do you mean by this rite? You shall say, it is the Pesach, it is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, because he passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt when he smote the Egyptians, he saved our houses. Now, of all that ancient ritual revolving around the Pesach, revolving around the Passover sacrifice. Last night at our Sedarim, we had only a relic, a single roasted lamb bone, meatless, which was there on the table. It remained there, largely simply being there, inert, except at one small part of the service when a child asked, what is the meaning of Pesach? And the father, or whoever was conducting the service, lifted up the shank bone and spoke of the ancient Paschal sacrifice. Because after the destruction of the temple, a great transformation took place in the observance of the Pesach, in observance of the Seder, of the night of the beginning of our holiday. It was made necessary by the destruction of the temple. No longer was there a place for pilgrimage. No longer was there an opportunity to offer sacrifices. What was retained was the sense of table fellowship. What was retained was the Passover's hymn, the Hallel, What was retained was the simple relic, the shank bone, the roasted lamb bone. What was retained was a sense of family, of the family sharing that table fellowship. But all else was refashioned, reshaped. And now the central element of the Passover was the Haggadah, the recital, the rehearsal of the events, an attempt to understand in what God's miraculous protection had in fact consisted. And now a number of new rituals develop. Rituals which, interestingly, were taken over not from our earlier history, but from the practice the Jews saw around them when noble Romans went out for an evening meal. When the noblest Roman of them all and all other Romans went out to dine out, they came to somebody else's home, they were greeted with a drink, the cocktail hour, and they were offered fresh vegetables and a dip and perhaps some candied sweet. There was always an appetizer before the dinner. And when they went into dinner, they did not sit at a table as we do with straight-backed chairs all in serried row. They reclined on small couches, and they leaned on their left side, and the food was brought to them and placed on small tables in front of these individual couches. And after the dinner, in both Greek and Roman times, there was entertainment. In the less cultured homes, it was rather crude, song and dance and clowning. In the more cultivated homes, it was discussion. The philosophers whom the family patronized came and discussed the important philosophic themes of policy and of government, law and beauty. Poets whom the family patronized came and read their poetry. Often the guests were invited to play intellectual mind games. Now, if we look at this meal and we look at our Seder, we can see how much has been taken from the Roman practice and made part of our own. The parsley and the salt water, the fresh vegetable and the dip, the harosis, the chopped up of apples and nuts and fruit, was the candied sweet before the meal. In a traditional home to this day, the one who conducts the Seder will lean a little bit on his left side on a pillow to symbolize that he too is a free man. And the last of the four questions asks, why on all other nights do we eat, whether we are seated straight up in a straight back chair or leaning? This night we celebrate only as if we are leaning. And finally, after the meal, there are the games and the songs. There are the Who Knows Who Won, and the Haggadah, all the familiar themes. All of these grew out of what the Jews, after the destruction of the temple, saw around them in the world of which they are a part. But what remains consistent with the practice before the destruction of the temple is the Haggadah itself, the narration, our attempt to relive, to understand the meaning and the implication of the Passover itself. And what is that meaning? Well, the first and most obvious meaning of the Passover, the first theme of the Haggadah, is that man is meant to be free, that all forms of tyranny, political, social, economic, are to be condemned. God participates in man's drive and thrust for freedom. He wishes us to be free men and free women, equally participating in the opportunity of the world which he has made ours. The first theme of the Passover is the theme of human rights. And an obviously elemental example of this are the prisoners of conscience in the Soviet Union, the Jews of the Soviet Union who want to be free. But they're all through our world, in every country. There are groups of people and individuals who, because of their race or faith, or because of their birth, or because of the color of their skin, for whatever reason, are denied a full share in the opportunity of that community. The beginning of the third century of this era, when the Babylonian Jewish community was about to be established, one of the great founders of that community, Mar Samuel, began his particular Seder night explanation. And the explanations of Seder night are always to be improvised, added to, by using the text, "We were slaves in Egypt, and God redeemed us with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Had he not taken us out of Egypt, we and our children and our children's children would still be slaves." You recognize the text from the Haggadah from last night. It's a text of human rights. It's a text of freedom. The Exodus is the prototype of man's long, long search, thrust to be free. You know, one of the oldest debates which course among us, which has been part of the human philosophic community since almost the beginning of conscious time, is the question of how man can in fact affect progress. There are those who say that we are cruel and we are greedy and we are callous because our institutions have made us so, that man is shaped by the institutions of which he's a part. Therefore, we need the radical reform of our institutions. We need revolution in order to have a new man emerge, a human being who is quiet and loving and empathetic and sensitive and civilized. And these kinds of people look to the change, the transformation of the institutions of the society as the means of effecting progress within the social order. And Mar Samuel obviously was such a man, and that theme is taught to us in our Haggadah. But there are those who say that after a revolution, you have very little change except some new institutions and a new set of rulers. And these new set of rulers are as power hungry and as callous and as greedy in their own way as those who went before, and if they are not, power will soon corrupt them. That what we need to really achieve progress is the transformation of the individual. Man must put behind him the ignorance and the superstition, the prejudice, which is part of his soul. He must grow, he must learn, he must expand, he must sensitize his own person, he must mature, he must become a competent adult, and that is a task for the individual, regardless of the social order of which he finds himself. Mar Samuel's great co-founder of Babylonian Jewry, a man named Rav, suggested as the first theme for his Haggadah, for his narration of the Passover, the text, "In the beginning our ancestors were idol worshippers, but now God has drawn us nearer to his service." Rav was one of those men who emphasized our own personal responsibilities to educate ourselves, to grow wise, to train ourselves by acts of will and experience to be sensitive to the needs of others, to be concerned with what we are within, regardless of the social context in which we find ourselves. And that theme, too, is in the Haggadah for the text you remember from having spoken it last night. In our tradition, we hold fast to the one and we do not leave go of the other. It's a question of both and, not of either or. There's always a need to transform, to improve the institutions, the society of which you're a part. But at the same time, there's always a need to take hold of yourself. And by discipline, and by will, and by concern, and by study, and by through experience, to improve yourself, to expand your spirit, to become more conscious of your duty, to become more sensitive to ethical questions. Take hold of the one, and do not leave go of the other. The Haggadah is an amazing collection of ideas which revolve around the question of freedom and of progress and of change. How is it, in fact, that we can move our society and ourselves towards a better and fuller life? How is it that we can achieve freedom and security and maintain it? And the answer is the answer of Mar Samuel, and the answer is the answer of Rav. On the one hand, to look at our institutions critically, to see where they impose a rule of privilege on behalf of the few against the needs and the rights of the many. But at the same time that we are conscious of the social order, not to be unconscious of the needs that each of us must evidence to improve himself and herself by discipline, by will, by concern, by study, and by awareness. These are the themes which the Haggadah places before us. They are themes which are as relevant today as they were 2,000 years ago. Freedom from, yes, freedom for, by all means. Amen.